deprived of a gavel, but I think I can speak loud enough and in short bursts enough. I thank you, sir. Thank you. All right. Call to order a meeting of the Finance Committee at 1:37 on the afternoon of December 1st, 2016. The first item will be approval of an agenda. Now, we have a very full agenda for today's meeting, so I would like to propose a few changes so that the committee can use its time, starting belatedly, most efficiently. I would like to move approval of the agenda with the following modifications. First, unless there are objections, I suggest that the committee forego the presentation of the select pass and reimbursable bus service items. That is, proceed further without the actual slide presentation, and then proceed directly to a vote on these two matters after a question and answer period, of course. I would also suggest that we move the approval of the FY18 budget public hearing to become the last item on the agenda today. This will allow the committee to have the benefit of a full discussion on the general manager's proposed FY2018 capital budget and FY2018 to 2023 capital improvement program, as well as the operating budget work session discussion prior to voting on the docket of items to take to the public hearing. Therefore, can I get a second to amend the agenda accordingly as just described?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank
Aye.
You. The second issue is approval of the minutes. You've all received copies of the minutes from the prior meeting in November. I'll entertain a motion for approval of those minutes. Second?
Second.
All in favor? Signify by saying aye. Thank you. Now I'd like to briefly review before us the items that we will deal with today. First, the committee will be asked to approve the Title VI equity analysis for the Select Pass pilot and to make the Select Pass a permanent part of the Metro tariff. The Select Pass, which is a customized monthly pass product, has been well received by customers and its usage continues to grow. The equity analysis shows no concerns about making this pass permanent. Next, the committee will be asked to amend the budget for FY2017, the current year, to allow for two reimbursable projects, two bus routes as follows: additional trips on the 16Y Columbia Pike, Virginia, the Farragut Square line, and the new limited stop Metro Extra service on Rhode Island Avenue in the district, the G9. Following these two items, the general manager will present his proposed FY2018 capital budget and the 2018 to 2023 CIP. Next, staff will provide information on ridership and revenue, both historic trends and predictions, as part of the committee's ongoing discussions about the FY2018 operating budget. And then lastly, our last order of business will be to vote on the FY2018 budget proposal to take it out for public comment, including any increases in fares and reductions in service. And therefore, I would like to remind my colleagues on the committee that whatever is approved today will represent a ceiling, not a floor, meaning on what the committee can do and ultimately the board can approve in terms of fare increases and that are smaller than what is proposed and what's out there on the public docket or none at all, as well as reductions in service or none at all that are less than what is to be taken to the public for comment on the public docket. However, all potential changes must be included in the public docket for public comment. Okay, therefore, let's turn to the two items of select pass and the two reimbursable bus service items for amendments to the FY17 budget. We have a table in front of you, Mr. Canaan and Mr. Humry, who are available to answer any questions any members may have on those two products, those two items. So I'll open the floor to see if anybody has any questions for these gentlemen on those two items at this point in time. Hearing none. Gone. Therefore, I will entertain two motions. First, a motion for approval of the equity analysis and to make Select Pass a permanent Metro fare product. Is there such a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Very good. Well, second, I will entertain a motion to approve the FY 2017 budget for the two reimbursable bus service items so described.
So moved.
A second?
Second.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank you. We have dispensed with those two items. Thank you, Mr. Kanaan. Thank you, Mr. Homrey. Now we will turn. Ah, I'm sorry, Ms. Hudgens. I went too fast.
Virginia's bus service improvements. We'll come back to a budget, or we'll do it.
Okay, we'll do that when we take up the last item, the matters to be part of the public hearing record. All right, so we are ready to move on to the capital improvement program for FY 2018 and for the 6-year period, including 2018 through 2023. Mr. General Manager.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to give some brief comments and turn it over to Dennis and Tom to get into the meat of the matter. But as a number of you were at earlier meetings today, I think there's just a few high points I want to hit on. One is fiscal year 18, basically roughly 85% of the dollars already spoken for. In effect, we're just delivering projects that already have been out there rolling, so there isn't a lot of room in 18 for sure. The other thing that something that is new is I'm proposing what I'm calling the development and evaluation program of the CIP, which is basically the ability to look at projects before they move from either capital needs inventory or someone's great idea to basically a construction program. And to create a program where we actually do detailed work, whether it's engineering, public outreach, whatever, before we move forward to a commitment to construct. And some of the examples in that were that we've identified is, you know, what is the future of the 2000 and 3000s? Do we do a midlife? Do we buy new, for instance? Let's think that through before we put a bunch of hundreds of millions of dollars into the program to do that. And the another example is the Red Line Tunnel and some of the issues we have to deal with north of DuPont Circle. So you'll be seeing more of that in Dennis's presentation. The other thing I think that, and this is to give credit to Tom and the entire team, you know, last year we were basically, last few years we've been spending about 65% of the capital budget. Last year we did bring in 85%, and just about this time last year I'd asked to reduce the capital budget from $1.2 billion to $950 million. And to give me a year to try to get that under control, and with the caveat that I would have to come back to you if we were able to deliver. And I believe it was either meeting before or the one before that, we did come back and ask for an amendment, and we're now up to about that $1.2 billion delivery rate. The six-year program is about $7.2 billion. Interesting, it is very close and very similar. We had been working with Jeff DeWitt from the district in thinking through the out years of the program, and it's very similar to that. It was, as we talked about earlier, the CNI did play a role in this, but again, we're in the middle of a process of getting a much more robust CNI, but we did look at, obviously, the categories of fundings that we have. So in the out years, we have categories of dollars that we know that are coming, but over time, we will develop the specific projects. And again, I think that's where the D&E program, the development evaluation program, will come in into the future. So with that, I will turn it over to Dennis and Tom to walk us through the presentation.
Thank you. So through the capital improvement program, Metro advances major capital projects, capital reinvestment programs that improve the safety, state of good repair, and reliability of the rail, bus, and Metro access assets. Proposed investment plan priorities include new 7,000 series rail cars, buses, and paratransit vehicles to replace the oldest and least reliable vehicles, investment in rehabilitation, repair, and maintenance of the existing rail car and bus fleets to improve and sustain safety and reliability, installation of infrastructure to support radio and wireless communications in the system, continued investment in rail and bus system infrastructure to improve safety and address state of good repair backlogs, and reinvestment in stations to improve reliability of escalators, elevators, station lighting, and improve the customer experience. Program also includes, as the general manager mentioned, a new development evaluation program. The proposed FY18 capital budget totals $1.25 billion. As was mentioned, more than 85% of that planned investment is already underway, meaning that the contracts and the workforce for the execution of that work are in place today, and it's a continuation of those activities next year. Beginning in FY18, management also recommends including the capital reimbursable projects within the CIP as jurisdictional projects rather than a separate program. This is a structural change, moving projects sponsored by the jurisdictions into the overall CIP to improve clarity and awareness of all the projects in Metro's capital portfolio. It'll have no net impact on regional funding as the projects bring both the expense and the funding source with it. The proposed six-year CIP totals $7.2 billion. The foundation of that proposed CIP is, again, the ongoing projects, major projects, and safety and state of good repair programs. The six-year CIP is also informed by the CNI, or the first phase of the CNI, and although the needs identified in the CNI are much greater than $7 billion, given the funding constraints and the fact that many of these major projects have not gone through a development and evaluation program yet, Metro has sized the program to an amount that we expect can be delivered during that six-year period. Metro's rate of capital program investment continues to improve. Over $1 billion was invested through the FY16 CIP. And in 17, we're forecasting investment of $1.1 to $1.2 billion. CIP is grouped into six investment categories, and underneath this, 22 investment programs. And within each of these categories are major projects and ongoing safety and state of good repair programs. In the railcar program, $523 million is planned for investment in railcars and maintenance facilities in FY18 and $2.5 billion over the six-year period. Major investments include the acquisition of 7,000 series rail cars to replace the 1,000, the 4,000, and the 5,000 series cars, preventive maintenance, repair, and rehabilitation of the existing fleets, and rehabilitation and repair of rail yard and maintenance facilities. Proposed budget assumes that 224 cars will be delivered and accepted in FY18. That's roughly 9 months of 20 cars and 3 months of 16 cars. $117 million is planned for investment in rail systems in FY18, and the proposed CIP includes close to $900 million over the six-year period. Rail system investment priorities include the installation of the new radio and wireless communications infrastructure, safety, state of good repair, and capacity improvements in rail propulsion power systems, and rehabilitation and replacement of automatic train control equipment and systems. Track and Structures Program, $113 million is planned for investment in FY18 and $770 million over the six-year period. Track and Structures investment priorities include the safety and state of good repair, the rail system track components, including rail cross ties, fasteners, and structures, including bridges and tunnels. Category also includes the development and engineering of new major projects to address the water problems on the Red Line. Stations and passenger facilities, just over $200 million is planned for investment in FY18, and the proposed budget includes, proposed CIP includes over $1.4 billion. Investment priorities here are, again, the replacement of elevators and escalators and rehabilitation of those, renewed lighting in stations, rehabilitation of station fire and life safety systems and station cooling, modernization of fare collection equipment and systems, and the rehabilitation of parking garages. Bus and paratransit, $225 million is planned for investment in 18 and $1.3 billion over the six-year period. Primary investment priorities, again, are replacement of those vehicles, reinvestment in the existing fleet to ensure safety and continuing reliability, completion of the construction of Cinderbed Road Bus Maintenance Facility and Andrews Federal Center Bus Maintenance Facility. And category also includes the development and engineering or evaluation of a new or rebuilt Bladensburg and Northern Bus Maintenance Facility. In business support, $65 million is planned in FY18 and $326 in the six-year period. Primary investment priorities are MTPD equipment, roof replacement across the system, and information technology investments to support both operations and business functions, improving efficiency and effectiveness in areas like timekeeping and right-of-way scheduling. Proposed development and evaluation program. Primary purpose here is to help ensure that projects have clearly defined scopes, schedules, cost estimates, and that appropriate consideration has been given to alternative solutions to the need or to the problem and to risks. The proposed needs to be developed and evaluated beginning in 18 or beginning actually this year, red line water remediation and core capacity needs, the 2 and 3K replacement, tunnel ventilation needs, rebuild or replacement of Bladensburg, and Metro's office facility requirements. The FY18 proposed budget assumes federal formula and PREA grant funding at the same level as in the current year, FY17, approximately $118 million from MWA for rail cars and Silver Line construction support, $14 million from jurisdictional projects, and $801 million of state and local funding and long-term debt. Importantly, this funding plan is $1.4 billion, $150 million more than the investment plan of $1.25 billion. The difference there is a repayment of short-term borrowing we projected to have in FY17 in support of the railcar program and SafeTrack, that increased investment level in the current year. For purposes of comparison, the $801 million of jurisdictional contributions and debt funding is about $40 million more than was forecasted last April when the board adopted the FY17 to 22 capital program. The proposed six-year CIP financial plan assumes federal transit formula funding will continue at current levels, that PREA will be reauthorized and appropriated each year. The plan includes approximately $300 million, or just under $300 million, from MWA for rail cars again and Silver Line construction. And it assumes an increased level of jurisdictional contributions to address more of the system safety, state of good repair, and reliability needs, a total of $4.2 billion of jurisdictional contributions in debt. In terms of next steps, the current capital funding agreement among Metro and the funding jurisdictions expires next June 2017. CFA provides the framework for jurisdictional contributions to match federal formula grants and discretionary grants, as well as additional state and local contributions for projects. It also forms a structure for Metro's short and long-term debt strategies for the CIP. The agreement must be renewed or replaced prior to July 1 to avoid any major disruptions to the capital program. Discussions among Metro and the funding jurisdictions have resumed. We had a meeting earlier this week. Jurisdictional funding allocation information is included in the appendix of this presentation. And additional detail on the overall CIP and the FY18 capital budget will be available in the proposed budget document, which will be published in the middle of December. That concludes our presentation. We'd be happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm sure there'll be a number of questions coming from members of the committee. To start it off, let me ask you a question about rail cars and the slide dealing with rail cars, which is 86 of 110. And I just want to make clear for myself and other members of the committee exactly what is in the six-year budget. So on your first bullet under six-year highlights, am I correct that the 748 new 7,000 series rail cars is the total number of rail cars, 7,000, that have already been authorized by the board in prior votes for the 7,000 rail car purchase?
It includes all of the rail cars that have been ordered from Kawasaki, yes, okay. In total, including
and
the cars delivered today.
So the 224 are the number to be delivered in the first year, FY18, and so the balance are those to be delivered in the remaining 5 years or a shorter period.
The 748 includes cars that have already been delivered,
right,
in FY17 and prior.
Right, but all the 748, I think what your bullet is saying is will be delivered in this six-year period.
Yes.
Yes, okay. And then your third bullet talks about accelerated replacement of the 2,000 and 3,000 fleet, which, as I understand from our prior conversation, covers 364 rail cars. And this would require a new board action to approve this acquisition. Is that correct? This is not something that's been approved by any prior board resolution.
Not the procurement specifically, no. It has not been approved. The FY17, the current capital improvement program, assumes the development evaluation of a 2 and 3K rail car buy. So to the extent that the board approved that that six-year plan, it has been incorporated into the budget.
Okay. But you'll be coming back with an actual proposal sometime in the spring for this proposed 2,000 replacement for the 2,000 and 3,000 series rail cars. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, that's the point of putting that into the development evaluation program. Because I want to take a look at, do we do a midlife overhaul? Do we go with a new product?
Right.
So that's what we'll be coming back with. So, and no, the board has not approved that yet.
That's exactly what I was getting at,
right.
Because I think the board would want to know
right.
choices and some options.
Right, but what we're seeking basically the dollars, in effect, to think through that. So when we come back to you, we have something.
Okay. Do you have a rough estimate of what that acquisition would entail for purchasing 364 or some amount of new rail cars that you're folks just to give us some sense of where we're going for this in the future?
It's in the range of 2.5 per car or more. So you're looking at more than $600 million, potentially quite a bit more than that.
Very good. Okay. Other questions, members? I mean, I can keep going if no one
else. Is it possible to go to, oh, no.
Please.
Is it possible to go to the slide which now just disappeared on the jurisdictional contributions in the appendices? Yeah, Lord, Lord. I don't know where that went. It's in the appendices, and it has it. It's for 6 years. Yeah, I think that's it, and that was it. Yeah, right there. Okay, so I understand the implications of this for the District of Columbia. We're being asked to contribute those amounts each year for the 6 years, and is this a part of the six-year CIP that we will be approving? Is that, Paul, what this is? Yeah?
Yes.
Okay, so once we approve this, will the city, the district, be committed to paying those amounts?
That's correct.
Yeah.
If the board approves this, obviously, as you know, the CFA underpins all of the regional commitments with respect to Metro's capital. So that will ultimately be the controlling document. This is just the first step. The next step, which is why Tom mentioned it, is the CFA, which the jurisdictions have to approve. And to the extent that they reflect the same set of numbers, then that's what they'll be committed to paying.
Okay.
Can I just interject something?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'll clarify this. You can go back two slides. Yeah. Now here, your numbers are different because you've introduced the concept of long-term debt, which has the effect of reducing the amount that's in the state and local line. So I think what you're saying is there that part of the numbers that Chairman Evans was concerned about include the amount of long-term debt that the jurisdictions would be proposed to be financing under this slide. Is that a correct interpretation of these two slides?
Each jurisdiction will make a decision with respect to whether or not they want to fund this directly or through debt. What we're focused on is, you know, what the numbers are, and the jurisdictions at the right times will make their own determinations whether it's going to be debt or.
But are these your recommendations as to what percentage of those jurisdictional asks or obligations should be funded by long-term debt?
Well, this is the starting point. What we've done is essentially carry over some of the debt that were assumed in the current plan. As we've spoken with the JCC and the jurisdictions, this, as you know, will may ultimately not be the final set of numbers, because the jurisdictions will decide whether or not they're going to use debt or they're going to provide direct capital contributions to Metro.
Correct. But I guess my question is, and maybe it's the same question that the chair is asking, is if the jurisdictions decide that the debt should be issued by WMATA, are you presenting and saying that you're confident that this amount of debt issuance, the 441 and FY18, and let's take FY19, a 222, is something that WMATA could take to the markets and sell?
Yes.
Okay. Then going back two slides again, do those numbers include the $50 million PREA match that we make every year?
Yes.
It does. So looking at the, I can't really see that well, but 282 under 18, $50 million is PREA money, and then the city has to come up with 232 on its own.
Correct.
Is that how it is? And well, although the $50 million is our money as well? No.
The district, in this particular case, the district has to come up with 282, which includes $50 million to match their portion of the PREA.
Yeah,
commitment.
Okay. The 50 is inherent in the 282.
That's correct.
Okay. It's not in addition to the 282.
The local portion of it. Right. It's the local portion only. That's
and then the 150 is from the feds. Is that what you're
yes.
talking about?
Yes.
Yeah. So the 150 is from the feds. And the 282 would include our 50 as well as an additional ask on top of that at 232.
That's correct. You pull in another 50, right?
Yeah. Okay. Okay. That's all I got.
Mr. Boulder. Yes, sir.
Phase 2 Silver Line, is that in here? From MWA, starting point, that was on the slide. I forget which slide, the pie chart slide. There was a way in the beginning. There you go. Okay, I see it now. Okay. So it's in.
No, the capital cost for the Silver Line construction,
yeah.
It's not in here.
Because we're not paying it.
Okay, you said before you were going to do jurisdictional projects. Isn't that the same thing?
So, yeah, but that said, obviously we...
No, this is a capital budget, but it's not operating. This is capital.
Right, but it's not capital that WMATA is going to spend.
It's part of...
What is included here are Metro's costs for the expenses Metro is going to incur to purchase rail cars and to support the Silver Line construction. What's not included here is MWA's costs, direct costs for the construction of the Silver Line.
Right. Okay. Just want to be clear where we put it.
Okay. One other question that I have is item near and dear to me, the Red Line Water Mitigation Project. So under track and structures, you've listed this as a development and evaluation project. So does that mean, let me ask the question this way, is there any money in this six-year under structures for the Red Line Water Mitigation Project?
The funding that's included is to develop the project. There is not funding for construction of whatever that solution ends up being.
So the work on the water mitigation on the Red Line would not begin during this six-year period?
Excuse me. obviously there's work that continues every day out there, but I just want to make sure we're clear. I mean, so there is work going on out there. This is, you know, what is the ultimate solution? And that's what this is trying to get to. All right, let's think through that and come up with a plan and bring that forward. So that's what this is driving.
All right. So, but I'm just trying to get at that the actual cost of the water mitigation.
Yeah, I don't know. Would
be beyond this six-year period.
Oh, yes.
Okay, they're not included at all here. This is something beyond the six-year, beyond the 2022-2023 period.
But Michael, just to keep a point on it, I assume we're going to start working on the solution to the red line leaking problem. So if a year from now we have the solution is to build a new tunnel within the tunnel and it costs $2 billion, it doesn't mean that we wouldn't amend this to put that in here. It just means that we don't have it today, right?
Yeah, but this is basically to figure out what that is.
Right.
Is it a tunnel within a tunnel? Is there some other solution? What right. is that? And then we would come back next year and say, here's what we know, here's what we want to propose, or
okay.
year after, whatever it takes.
Okay.
But we have to spend,
sure.
rather than just put a number out of the air that says, well, we're putting $500 million or $600 million in there.
Okay.
We're not doing that any longer. We're going to figure it out.
But yeah, I don't want to leave the point that we're not going to address the red line until 6 years out plus. We could actually start addressing it sooner when we get the solution, whatever that is.
It'll be part of an upcoming budget, and that'll be a decision for the board to make.
Okay.
Mr. Bulger, we seem to be going back and
forth. If you go back to the jurisdictional contribution six-year numbers, please, in the appendix. Under Virginia, I hate to pick on Virginia, Kat, but is Loudoun County not counted in this six-year projection, or are they outside of the six-year, even though Phase 2 Silver Line is supposed to be done within the six-year envelope?
Go to the next slide. That's the wrong slide. Yeah.
Are they?
Has not come into the system yet. The system.
I'm sorry, Kathy. I can't hear you, please.
Loudoun has not come into the system yet.
No, but under a six-year scenario, Kathy, were they in or out of the 6 years?
They will be opting into the portion that's the remainder of the 6 years.
I thought Phase 2 was going to be done by 2021.
20 is the best.
The best you've heard. Okay, it was 18, right? Then it got pushed to 20.
The long-term expectation is that Loudoun will be part of the construct. But at this point, and at that point, these numbers and the allocations will change. But at this point, they are not.
Do they know that?
Yes.
Is this
no.
reality?
Well, it is. It's the same as anybody. We've done with all.
She could screw up a one car.
So what you're doing is programming for the current 6 years.
All right.
There is no operational line. And so we will come back next year and redo this six-year plan, and you'll see this and that by 20 or 21, we will know lap 20.
Okay.
We'll know lap
no surprises. Just want to make sure everybody knew what was going on.
Yeah,
that's it. All right. Seeing no other questions, let me just summarize where we go from here on the capital budget. We will, of course, towards the end of the session today, approve a public hearing. That public hearing will probably be held in late January, early February, where we'll take public comment on both the capital budget as well as the operating budget. And so we will be looking forward to ultimately approving this capital budget in March of next year, March 2017. Hopefully, at the same time, on a parallel track, the jurisdictions will be meeting with staff, and they will reach some agreement on a capital funding agreement so that when we come back to having approved this, we will be doing it in the context of fully an approved capital funding agreement agreed by all the various jurisdictions, D.C., Maryland, and various jurisdictions in Virginia, perhaps including Loudoun County, whatever it be. So if we're in good shape there, we will move on to the FY18 operating budget, which was presented last month. And we'll have a work session today. As chair, I would like to begin our work session today by suggesting hopefully a path forward that can lead to our ability to adopt a balanced operating budget for FY18 that majority of the board can approve. The general manager's proposal for closing the budget gap of $290 million by shared sacrifice is a very good start. It provides for paying for all stakeholders, riders, employees, funding jurisdiction, with a combination of modest fare increases, rail and bus service right-sizing, workforce reductions, subsidy increases, and some other management actions. Now, I believe that with a few amendments, we can move towards a consensus that will provide some modest relief for riders from the fare increase and service cuts proposed, and some relief for the funding jurisdictions as well. The GM's proposal calls for an increase of $130 million in subsidy payments over the existing levels for this fiscal year for the District, Maryland, and the Virginia jurisdictions. From my conversations with jurisdictions in Maryland and in Virginia, this is a tough budget year, and reducing the subsidy increase on local jurisdiction budgets and taxpayers to just somewhere south of $100 million would be a more reasonable and sustainable increase for taxpayers in the regions. And I believe we can get there with some combination of three budgetary changes to the GM's proposed budget that I would offer members of the committee for your consideration in the weeks ahead. First, preventive maintenance funded in the capital budget would be increased from $60 million as proposed by the general manager to $80 million. This is still less than the $95 to $100 million for preventive maintenance expenses funded in the capital budget for this year. This would save $20 million from the operating budget and is fully consistent with Federal Transit Administration policy on preventive maintenance expenses. We would be continuing to move towards our historic $31 million level for preventive maintenance in the operating budget, but at a more gradual pace than proposed by the general manager. Second, in the budget, there's a significant increase for spare parts purchases in the operating budget of $35 million over what's in there for FY17. On first reflection, these seem to be capital assets for both the rail and bus system fleets that could properly be funded in the capital budget if not for our emergency parts purchase program that does not rely on competitive bidding for parts purchases at all times. So the proposal here would be that we use some jurisdictional capital funds for these spare parts purchases for FY2018. And third, I would ask the general manager to take a look at his management actions and to see if those could be increased by another $10 million from $50 million to $60 million. On first reflection, the reduction of 500 positions by the general manager should get us very close to the $50 million alone, as the average WMATA employee compensation with benefits is around $100,000 per employee. And so if we can do those things, we would be reducing the operating budget by about $60 to $65 million, which would be more than enough to reduce the ask on the jurisdictions to something south of $100 million. So what do we do with that money that's been saved? If we do save an additional $35 million, I would offer two proposals out there. I would first suggest that we reduce the proposed Metro bus fare increase of 25 cents each way, but for the neediest of riders only, by introducing a subsidy program that would cover the increase for the neediest Metro bus riders. Those eligible would be those meeting the test for subsidy eligibility under the Affordable Care Act. I understand that King County Metro, which serves the city of Seattle, implemented a bus subsidy program last year for its riders along these very lines. People whose household incomes is no more than 200% of the federal poverty level, which is the level of eligibility under the Affordable Fare Act, would be able to find a discount fare card to participate in such a reduced fare program. Since We have reduced fare programs now for students as well as for senior citizens. It seems we should be administratively able to design a bus fare reduction program for use of this additional $35 million. And finally, I think if we still have any money left over, it might be possible to reduce the number of Metro bus routes that would be cut or subject to service reductions. The general manager's budget has now put that at $18 million. Perhaps we can cut that down to $9 or $10 million and save some of those bus routes from being cut off the table. So those are some ideas that I would offer for your consideration. I would also suggest, as a segue into what we're bound to discuss here, that the general manager's budget forecasts an $85 million reduction in revenue from this current fiscal year, FY17, from $775 million to $690 million, which is an 11% revenue decline. With the end of SafeTracks, we should be expecting some modest increase in ridership and revenue, not a continued decline. So I submit that perhaps as more months of experience in ridership figures for FY2017 become available, perhaps some increase in the passenger revenue forecast could be considered by the general manager, which might find us a little more leeway on the operating budget. So as I said, I think this is a good segue into the work session today, which will focus on ridership and revenue estimates for FY18. Mr. Anasaki? Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman,
let me see if I understand this. We are now in the process of, as a governance, replacing the proposal or making comments regarding this budget. So we're going to the governance group is going to supplant the management's expertise in terms of handling financial items such as this nature. That's the first thing. If you don't understand, I'll give you further clarification. I think it's highly inappropriate for us to be making these comments without the let me ask the question: has the management seen what you just proposed, or are you just hitting them in a public session? It's patently unfair to them as managers. I think from a governance point of view, if you had those particular concerns regarding the budget, it would be beneficial for all of us for you to provide the management an opportunity to review, and then they can respond to it. But to do it in a public session is highly unusual.
Mr. Price, this is not anything that I expect anybody to comment on today. We're going to be engaged in this budget exercise for the next 3 months. All I was doing is presenting some ideas of the chair as to how we can move forward and ultimately reach a balanced budget that meets the needs of everybody's riders, stakeholders, other stakeholders, and jurisdictions. This is an exercise that boards and these finance committees go through each year in looking at a budget. The particular ideas that I've talked about are ideas that I've mentioned to the general manager in the past, or ideas that I've mentioned in the past to the chief financial officer. So these are nothing new in terms of ideas. And so I only offer them, since this is ultimately going to be a decision that this whole committee, finance committee, mm-hmm. has to reach, I'm sort of bringing them out to everybody at this early stage of the process, so they'll know what my thinking is as chair.
Mr. Chairman, I think it would be helpful and respectful to the management to have provided them your comments early on, and maybe perhaps they could have incorporated some of your suggestions if they are truly valid.
Well, the normal process here is that at some point the general manager takes our considered opinions and our questions and answers in these work sessions and presents a revised operating budget. So this is in that process of providing him some ideas, and I'm sure you're going to provide him some ideas of changes that you would like to see, just as Chairman Evans will and just as other members of this committee and the board.
I conclude my response, and I stand by my statements. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Anasaki?
Mr. Goldman?
Sorry. Chair?
Okay. This is time to make our comments, right? Okay. From the District of Columbia's point of view, we do not support your concept of lowering the jurisdictional ask that has been made by the general manager. If anything, we support increasing that, but at the moment we don't support lowering it. And I caution putting it out there that we would ask the jurisdictions for less, lest the jurisdictions think that we actually might ask them for less. I think the 130 is a minimum we should be asking. The District of Columbia does not support, I've heard me say this millions of times, fare increases. So the fare increases on the bus to go from $1.75 to $2, particularly when we have a very large bus-dependent population, particularly among low-income individuals, I find to be very, very draconian. The increase in bus fares over the last 10 years from 2007, it's gone from $1.25 to $1.35 to $1.50 to $1.60, $1.75. So we've increased the bus fare constantly over the last 10 years, as we have the rail fare. 10 years ago, the rail fare, top rail fare was $3.90. Today it's $5.90. And now we're going to take it up to $6. So we find those increases, particularly in the light of the history of the increases, to be too excessive. Or excessive, period. We don't want to increase them at all. And secondly, in the environment we're in, where our riders have had to put up with a lot of inconvenience over the last year, I think it would be almost very difficult to go back to our riders now and say, we want you to pay more money for a system that's, you know, arguably not going to be a whole lot more reliable over the next year as the general manager tries to make it more reliable. So we don't support the fare increases. The service cuts, we don't support the rail service cuts. The mayor was very strong in her opinion that increasing the headways on the rail system, I can't remember off the top of my head, it was like 2 minutes and some other minutes, is not something that she supports, nor do the rest of us, the council. So on the rail side, we don't support the service cuts. And finally, I will give my commentary, and Mr. Dorsey asked a very good question last time, and so we have to get an answer to this. Mr. Anasicka, you said you had a comment, and I just need to get an answer to this. Last year, prior to last year, we were getting $31 million of capital money we were using on the operating side. Last year, it was raised to $90 million. The then chairman of the board, who is an expert in this field, a well-renowned person, commented, voted against that and said he found that to be a very, very bad practice. To use those capital dollars on the operating side. You mentioned last meeting that it's not only doable, but it's encouraged by the NTSB, or by the FTA. The FTA, when I talked to them, said they didn't encourage that at all. So I'm in a quandary. Mr. Dorsey, you raised the million-dollar question last time. Look, is it a good idea or is it a bad idea? And I'm tired of... And I'm putting words in your mouth of hearing other people give their opinions on this. So last year when we did it, I can just, many of you are in the room, and Mort Downey said this, it's a bad idea. Once you do it, it's going to be hard to wean yourself off of it. And indeed, here we are. We did not go back to 30. We went back to 60. Mr. Goldman's saying to go back up to 80, which is just a little bit short of 90. Should we be doing this or should we not be doing this? And we're not kidding ourselves. Next year, the ask is going to be even greater than it is this year. There is no money coming in, as I mentioned to you at the lunch. There's no cavalry coming over the hill. So how are we then going to wean ourselves off of the $80 million to get back to 31 when this year we can't even get to 60? So I put that all out there because these are the concerns that the district has about this. Now, if the solution is, again, to ask the jurisdictions for more money, this goes into my philosophy of public transportation. It's not a luxury, it's not a business, it's a necessity. I put it in the same categories as schools. Most people don't have kids in the public schools, yet we pay for it because it's the right thing and the necessary thing to do. It's a necessity for our society. Public transportation needs to find itself into that same area. A necessity for our society and for many people in our society, and we need to fund it as a public. I recognize many people don't agree with that philosophy, but that just happens to be mine. So Starting point, Mr. Goldman, that's where we start out, and so you're starting out at a different point. And over the whole course of the next months, I hope we can find our way to a middle ground on this.
I do, too. That's why it's good to begin this conversation now in December rather than let it go to March. Ms. Carmody?
Yes, thank you. First, thank you, Mr. Goldman, for your efforts and your thought given to this process. I would like to see a copy of your proposals so I can look at those and think about them, along with other thoughts and proposals. But my one reaction initially is with respect to your suggestion of reducing the amounts asking from the jurisdictions. It seems to me we're negotiating with ourselves a little bit here. We haven't really put the budget out yet. We should ask for the higher number initially instead of right away collapsing and saying we'll go for less. I just instinctively think that's not a good strategy. And second, with respect to Mr. Evans' concern about the capital money, et cetera, let me commit to asking formally the FTA what their view is. I mean, I'm the federal person. I will do that. It's been on my mind, and I will do it very soon. I will do it very soon. Yeah. So thank you.
To remind ourselves, we've got a lot of talent here to get into the actual budget proposal and stress testing it so that we could all make sure our questions are explored and we can have a dynamic conversation so that we can get to the point that you and Mr. Evans kind of already are with concrete proposals about how you'd like to have the numbers add up. But I thought, Mr. Goldman, the wisdom in your approach to these work sessions was to give us a chance to kind of go step by step and brick by brick to actually get to that point. So it's my encouragement to have us get that show on the road.
I'm ready to get started with that right now. Let's start with the question. Mr. Anasaki or Mr. Webster, on page 3 of your answer to questions, and I guess it is answer to question 3, you forecast ridership and revenue, and you show that you've now revised the ridership forecast for the current fiscal year, FY 2017, at 309,222,000 passengers. And then you project the ridership in your budget to decline to 294,365. So my two-part question there is that is how much of that decline from the 309 to the 294 is your projection of a continued decline in Metro Rail ridership, and how much of it is a reaction of ridership to the proposed fare increases and service cuts?
Thank you, Mr. Goldman. The approach that we typically take with respect to projecting revenue is to review the past, review ridership, and given the opportunity, you know, Sean would provide a sort of the context that leads ultimately to FY18. That said, what these numbers reflect is the use of the projected ridership numbers for FY17 as the base, and using that base then to apply the expected results from two things, one being the fare adjustments, and the second one being the proposed service reductions. Those two, as the general manager discussed last month, will result in will reduce overall ridership for next year. That is precisely what was leading to this result, and we can go into additional details if you want.
I guess my specific question is, if there were no fare increases and service cuts in the FY18 budget, would the amount of ridership you project be more than the 309,000, or would it be something less?
Without the fare adjustments and the service cuts, the ridership will certainly be more than what we're projecting.
Okay. And how can you give us those numbers as to how
yes.
much more?
Yeah.
So you're projecting a turnaround in ridership for FY 2018, absent fare increase in service cuts?
No, what we're projecting for FY 18, absent those adjustments, is at the same level, essentially at the same level, is essentially flat ridership.
Flat ridership.
Correct.
And so if the ridership is flat, then what you're saying is the
revenue numbers would have been
revenues declined by that delta.
That's correct.
15,000.
That's correct.
Gotcha. Thank you. Other questions from other members? Okay, we'll keep going.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, I just want to get back to your first set of proposals. Just make sure I'm clear. The 60 to 80, that's a policy decision for the board. There's nothing I can enter into that. But we will basically, I'm taking this as direction that I'm to look at these other options, at least to bring back to the committee for consideration.
Whether you think that there's some merit.
Yeah, I mean, well, we'll run numbers and tell you.
And to number them out.
Yes, okay. All right, just so I wouldn't be clear on that.
Mr. Ransacki, on page 4, answer to question 6. This is, I think, a question propounded by Mr. Dorsey on demand elasticity. And you say there, given the current ridership environment and overall uncertainty, management has been more conservative in forecasting FY18 than results of the ridership elasticity calculations would provide. What would have been the results with a strict application of the ridership elasticity calculation?
We can follow up with you on that. Obviously, the fact is that the typical models are not fully applicable to the current environment. And so to respond accurately to your question will require additional research, and I'll suggest that we do that.
If you do that. I mean, what I'm trying to understand is, instead of just taking your demand elasticity coefficient, which you've contracted from Maryland to produce and which you've used, you said you're applying some notion of management, discretionary management information, that discretion, as Mr. Dorsey says, that informs what you're projecting. I think what I'd like to know is, what would the coefficient have produced without, unaided by that application of management discretion? Other questions? Mr. Dorsey?
It's along those lines, and you may have done what I intended, but in the response to number 7 on elasticities, in your narrative, you expressed that the revenue lost is greater than the amount that would have been gained from new riders. Looking at the elasticity is not just about new riders, however, it's about mitigating the loss of riders. So you did factor that in. It's just, okay, great, thank you.
Mr. Goldman.
Okay. Yes, Ms. Huggins?
I thought it was going to continue on that side.
I'm prepared to continue. Yes, go ahead.
I'm going to go to one that's in the budget at the project development level. And there's a $3 million reimbursable projects. I guess it would be important to understand what the improvements are and what is the relevance in terms of how we are looking at future improvements at a time when we're trying to get to a state of good repair. Is there any, and I'll see if I can go to the slide for you. In the budget, but it's a line item that lists $3 million for improvements for reimbursable projects, and I just lost it in my deep dive. I'm going to have to go back to the other side of the book now. Okay. It's under reimbursable projects or project development.
So I think,
and
correct me if I'm wrong,
$3 million?
I think what you're referring to is the jurisdictional project development program.
Right.
So historically at Metro, there's been a an overall $3 million annual project planning and project development sponsored by the jurisdictions for specific jurisdictional projects. So improvements to bus loops at stations, variety of projects over the years, support for jurisdictional projects from Metro staff, that type of thing. This is not typically money that's used for development of large-scale projects. It's more minor projects and sort of jurisdictionally specific things.
So you consider it a placeholder, even though there are projects that we're investments that we're making in order to get to a state of good repair. Do we still need to have that line item? Do we see that kind of activity?
So the program is actually the result of specific requests from the jurisdictions.
So if there are...
It's somewhat unrelated to our larger capital program and safety and state of good repair programs.
And I guess I would ask the same question in terms of under... on the expenses for materials and supplies, where it shows the increases for 41% and 20%, are they related to any particular ones? For example, could it be for SafeTrack? Could it be for something else? And under expense, it's a 41% increase and a 20% increase in services. There.
Right. The expenses for materials and supplies, you are correct, is grown by that much. But the drivers for that growth are based on some of the things that we again discussed last month. Obviously you have the basic activities, you know, including metro access, which we expect to grow. We've got required activities both on the operating side to support some of the safety and security initiatives that are going on. We have new facilities that are coming on board, including Tacoma. And, of course, we have the basic inflation with respect to some of the things that we do. We can provide you more additional details if you need.
On the proposal, the slide, the cost recovery slide that you had,
yes.
I just want to understand it. I want to understand how it's showing the fare box recovery ratio sliding for FY18. What's driving that?
Okay. So fare box recovery or cost recovery, depending on the definition you want to choose. In this particular, just to be clear, fare box recovery simply looks at the fares that your customers are paying, and in this particular case, along with the revenue that comes from parking. And all what that metric does is simply divide those revenue to your overall organizational cost. That's your fare box recovery. With respect to total cost recovery, then you throw in things like revenue, joint development, all the other additional revenues that do not come directly from your customers. But a central element of that calculation, obviously, is ridership with respect to transit. And as your ridership, if your ridership is going down and your overall cost is going up, obviously the result is one that continues to decline. This is still relatively high in the industry.
Agreed.
But obviously, directionally, is headed the wrong way.
Agreed. It is still high. I totally agree with you, and you know that I do. But that just seems to be awfully significant. I mean, what is it that's making that such a big drop, though, that you're showing at 18?
This is the ridership. This is the conversation that obviously, the background that Sean was going to provide. That's when you look at the long-term trend for ridership, you'll see that there's been a significant decline, and that decline is what's showing up in this set of numbers or metrics.
Ms. Bolger?
As many as my colleagues know, we've been trying to tackle the pension issue, and to not getting, we haven't gotten very far with our pension trustees. Dennis, I don't know where the pension contribution and what, I have no idea how big it is, if it's increased, and where is it in the budget, the proposed budget?
Mr. Borgia, the pension contributions, it is part of the personnel budget? The operating budget, correct. And within the operating budget, it is in the personnel line item. We have made provisions for next year consistent with meeting the obligations on a pay-as-you-go basis. We have not, because there's no, we're still waiting, obviously. Pending board action with respect to a trust, we will not be able to make prospective contributions to that will ultimately grow and reduce the long-term outlook with respect to either pension or OPEB, which I assume is your main question.
The second question.
Tom, this is an issue we're going to deal with in the next work session.
Oh, I didn't know that you had structured it that way.
Employees and compensation.
Oh, that's,
and benefits.
Oh, I didn't get that email.
So that was
okay, so,
original.
All right, so yeah, we will tackle and get into the weeds,
work session, we
as Christian says, the brick and mortar of that issue.
Yeah, we will be tackling the issue of compensation, benefits, and the
okay, Mr. Chairman.
Of force, the workload level. Okay. In answer to question 17, you talked about 8-car trains, and you point out that one of the benefits of the right sizing will be to increase the percentage of 8-car train operations on 4 lines from 50% to 75%, but then you add the words subject to power system capacity. Can you sort of talk through what that limitation means and whether it applies to a certain line or applies to all four of the lines mentioned, red, orange, green, and blue? This is on page 7 of 9 in response to question 17.
Yeah, so generally what we intend with this response is that the reduction in the number of peak vehicles that would be required would allow for there to be enough cars to operate 75%. But there are areas of the system today, and I don't have the specifics with me right now, but where we don't have the power capacity to operate at that level. So so that's why that's what led to the up to 75%.
Yeah, well, I guess two follow-up questions. Do you know if that's limited to one line or is it just blue orange line, or is it a problem on all three lines?
It's throughout the system at this point.
It's throughout the system. Could you provide us with a follow up as to whether that means that essentially this sentence is meaningless, that essentially you won't be able to move up to 75% 8-car trains, or whether you'll be able to do that on some lines and not on others.
A couple of things. The first is we will be able to increase the number of 8-car trains, not necessarily all the way up to 75% on each line. But there are also ongoing capital investments today through the power upgrade program that will lead to expanded capacity. We'll check back with the chief engineer.
You can specify if any of those things will be completed during FY17 or part of FY18, so that at least by the end of FY18 you'll be able to hit this 75% 8-car train target.
We'll follow up.
In response, question 19, one of your proposals is to put in turnbacks at Grosvenor on the red line in the off-peak periods. And do I read this correctly, that the purpose of all this, at the end result, will only save $860,000? Is that a correct interpretation of your answer?
That's correct.
Thank you. I don't think that's a very good use of proposals for right-sizing the system that just doesn't seem to me to be worth the exercise or worth the effort. My final question, Mr. Sartor, is on response to question 21, dealing with closing some entrances on various stations. And the answer begins talking about 22 stations, but then towards the end of page 8, you say the preliminary estimate of annual savings of closing one mezzanine during weekend period is 50 to 90,000 in closing one mezzanine, blah, 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 weekend is 15 to 30 million. Are those estimates for just one station, or are those estimates for all 22 stations?
One station.
So the value would be those numbers times 22.
Yes. What?
Is that?
Again, there's variability with respect to stations and entrances. While a station may have two mezzanines, one of those may be serving, may have a special purpose, which means meeting ADA requirements. So while we have identified 22 stations with at least two, the number of actual mezzanines that will be closed, again, will be subject to additional review and due diligence. Right. That's why we did not provide an aggregate value in terms of cost.
I appreciate that. I was just trying to really clarify whether your numbers dealt with one mezzanine, one station, or whether that was your projection for all 22, and I now understand that it's only one. Earlier, you had made reference to some of Mr. Kanaan's slides, and I didn't want to deprive him of the opportunity of just talking through some of his ridership forecast for a couple minutes to give the committee the benefit of what your thinking is on ridership generally over the next few years.
I don't consider myself deprived at all. thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I've deprived you of the opportunity to talk about select paths, so I thought I should give you an opportunity here.
I think that the big piece that, as Mr. Anasiki had alerted you earlier, the fundamental question here is actually about the customers on the system. And so I'm just going to reprise very quickly where we are so that we can reestablish what our reasonable expectations are over the next 2-3 years and make sure we're not wandering into the territory of unreasonable expectations for either ridership or revenue based on where we are today. So fact number one, travel regionally is down. Okay, we've added 500,000 jobs, 500,000 people over the last 5 years, but the trips on the roads are down, okay? And trips on regional rail is down, and also trips on metro rail is down. So one thing to take into account is that, yes, the pie itself didn't grow over the past 5 years. The pie, in effect, shrunk, and transit trips generally shrunk, and transit trips on metro shrunk. So that's an important factor to keep in mind, and we don't have data right now that tells us that the pie itself is getting bigger, either today or yesterday or tomorrow or next year. So within that context, small share of a shrinking pie of regional trips. The second thing that I think we've brought forth is that, you know, there are lots of folks like to hypothesize about what's going on. I think, you know, again, the market is shrinking overall, and our share of the market, even if it was a fixed percentage, that would also shrink. But the fact of the matter is it's not that complicated. We know that ultimately we're putting a service out there, and the service that customers have asked for is a safe, reliable, rapid ride to help them go to and fro. And for quite a while, we've actually been giving them slower, infrequent, and relatively unreliable rides. So our job, which I know Mr. Wiedefeld has put front and center, is to give back the customers the service they expect. And in an environment that's really supply-driven demand, meaning when we put a service out there that the customers are less inclined to purchase, they're going to purchase it in lower quantities. So, you know, ultimately, this isn't rocket science. It's not train science. It's supply and demand, which some people call the dismal science, economics. Our job is to put out a product that customers want. And the GM's three-pronged assault on that is to do just that. If we were in a different situation, if the trains were running as advertised and there was room on the platforms and room on the trains and that they're moving quickly, we probably wouldn't be having the same discussion as we are today. So I think we've got to get the service fixed, and then we can start talking about ridership rebounds. But that is a precondition for any ridership rebound, getting the service back to where the customers expect and deserve to be. If you go to the next slide, then, there really is sort of, I guess I have the clicker. I will go to the next slide. In the near term, the thing we do have to deal with is that, you know, the market has bet on Metrorail. We've talked about this, and I know that for those of you who are familiar with maps, you know how to read this. For those of you who are less familiar with this, this is a map of the Metrorail system, and we see different circles representing the development that's coming online right now. This is not fanciful projects. These are projects that are permitted, they're financed, they've got cranes in the ground. This is good news and bad news in that we've got 95% of the construction activity in commercial real estate coming out in this region within a quarter, not a half, a quarter mile of Metrorail. We better be ready to serve it. Upshot of that is that that means, you know, hundreds of thousands of new trips per day on the system when these projects go live. So one thing to consider is that this has not been extraordinarily balanced. The bulk of this has been in the district and in Northern Virginia, which is great news for us. I think Maryland has been slower to advance transit-oriented development and to execute those projects to the point where the underutilized stations can actually generate ridership. The bulk of underutilized stations are in Maryland, and our analysis has suggested that if Maryland could execute the plans that they have on the books and just build to zoning, you'd have a Metrorail system that actually ran an operating surplus. So part of this equation means working with the jurisdictions to advance those projects. And really, in the meantime, for us to get to the point where our service is exactly where it needs to be for our customers. So finally, and I think trying to breeze through this, here's the context in which we have to remind ourselves that we're in. You know, the losses that we saw in the system primarily started on the weekends back in 2010, 2011, where we were doing single tracking on weekends, and guess what? When we produce less service, we get fewer customers. So, for instance, when we do a single tracking event, we see ridership on that line go down by 6 to 8%. When we do a bus bridge, we see ridership on that line go down by 18 to 20%. We saw 22% more track and structure rail car disruptions in 2015 than 2010. That was a 13% growth between 2014 and 2015. When we have the major disruptions that we've been dealing with because of the lack of infrastructure funding that, or execution that we need to do, we see ridership decline. So after the Stadium Armory transformer fire, we saw a 25% service cut to Silver, Orange, and Blue and a 10% reduction in ridership, and plus the trips are getting longer. So all of that is taking place within this broader context of rising and falling ridership. So if we go to the tail end here where we're in this position of declining ridership, I think we've been honest and trying to be honest with the public that this is now at a point where it's no longer pointing the finger at anybody else. We're pointing the finger at ourselves and saying we've got to get the service back. When we do that, we can start to approach that green line again. But while we're in this process of getting the service back, imagining any type of ridership increase both flies in the face of what the region is seeing in terms of travel demand and what our own data tells us about when how riders respond to degraded service. Dennis?
Any further questions? Questions on Mr. Kanaan's presentation? Any more questions on the FY18 budget work session today? Ms. Porter.
Let me just add one additional piece of information. The audit committee got a report, which is you all have received copies of this morning in our executive session, on evaluation of the rail fare activities. It doesn't make recommendations for where the fare should be set, but it evaluates the process of looking at rail fares and of projecting ridership, and there's also a section in there on fare evasion. So that might be something that members of the board might want to look at before the next discussion of budget.
Thank you. All right, if there are no more questions, yes, sir, Mr. Lowe.
Just a question about ridership. With the Silver Line coming on board, do we have any estimate about how many new riders we have versus riders that just get on Silver Line instead of the Orange Line? I mean, because right during this flat period, this is when Silver Line came on, correct?
Right. So the Silver Line question is one that revolves around a lot. And the simple math there is that when they did the ridership forecasts in that 2004 document, the economy was humming, and the expectation was that by opening day, there would be tens, if not many tens of millions of square feet of real estate built and occupied to greet the line when it opened. Well, 2008 happened. Every real estate project in the country went on hold for years. Some never came back. The Tysons-oriented ridership is starting to show the promise that they thought would show up in 2004. But until you see the actual land uses that were expected to be there start to actually get occupied, we're not seeing the bump that was expected in 2004. And there's been a lot of shifting between former Orange Line riders to Silver Line riders. So even though we did open up during that time period, the substrate of the economy changed magnificently in that 10-year period, not to our favor.
I think, as I recall, in the last year or two, I recall some presentations that were actually made on ridership on the Silver and Orange Line, and you drew some conclusions as to what ridership switched, and maybe that would be very helpful in response to Mr. Lobby's question, since he probably wasn't here back then.
No, I wasn't there, but I noticed at West Falls Church I can always get a parking spot now when I couldn't before. When Silver Line opened up, a lot of it ended up out in Reston and other places.
Oftentimes, me search can be as good as research. So I'll send you that breakdown.
Thank you. I think that'd be helpful. All right. If there are no other comments, questions on the budget review, we'll move on to the last item on the agenda, the request for the budget public hearing. Dennis, do you have a short presentation there?
As you know, the PM introduced the last year.
So here's how we'll proceed. I'll first entertain a motion for board authorization for the public hearing. So this will be a committee authorization recommendation to the board for the public hearing. Once that's been made and seconded, and then we'll open up to any jurisdictional amendments to add additional bus route proposals to be considered at the public hearing for reduction or change in the service pattern. And we'll vote on those amendments, and then we'll vote on the full motion for going to public hearing. So I will entertain a motion. Thank you. A second for the board to go to a public hearing. Thank you. Okay. So the going to a public hearing on the operating budget and the capital budget for FY18 is on the table now. Is there any discussion or are there any amendments in terms of what should be on the public docket? Mr. Bulger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The district has a number of additions to the docket, including, and I can present this to the staff if that's the appropriate way to do it, in the Metro bus fares, parking fees, Metro bus service, and rail service changes. How do you want to do it?
For the public record, state what they are right, so that they're okay. All on the public record. And
okay, under the Metro bus fare is the cash March trip.
We need a second to your motion to add these things to the public docket. Is there a second?
Second.
All right.
Okay. Jennifer, are you passing it out? Oh, thank you so much. I didn't know that. Okay, so everybody's got what the district's additions to the docket are. And at the beginning of the meeting, the chairman said you have to add, you can't subtract, so we're adding for consideration on the public hearings. And they are in front of you now, but I'd be glad, Mr. Chairman, to describe these in more detail if necessary.
I think it would be useful for you to just read them off so that since we don't have a distribution.
Okay, the first under Metro bus fares is the cash smart trip boarding charge for designated airport routes to be increased to $9. Number two is the 7-day regional bus pass priced at would be priced at 9 times a single ride bus fare for consideration. Under parking fees, voluntary demand based pricing initiative up to 3 locations per jurisdiction, raise or lower parking charges by 25 cents at each location.
What's your definition of jurisdiction for that item?
Maryland, Virginia, and the District of Columbia.
So it's the 3 state jurisdictions rather than each separate jurisdiction.
Right. In the district, to decrease Anacostia Station by 25 cents, at Minnesota, Rhode Island Avenue stations to be increased by 25 cents. Under Metro Bus Service, extend the new G9 limited stop route to originate and terminate in Fort Lincoln. Number two, merge the A6, the B8, the B9 bus routes with continued midday service to Colmar Manor. Number three, the 5A Dulles Airport Express service to be discontinued, something that you Maryland always wanted to do. Number four, 16th Street Corridor reallocation of service between local and limited bus stops by increasing the rush hour S9 and initiate midday and Saturday S9 limited stop service. Reduce the S2 and the S4 local service on weekdays and Saturdays. And finally, under proposed rail service changes, reduce weekend late night service on the Silver Line east of Stadium Armory. I think that's a turn back on weekends. It'd be a turn back at Stadium Armory, which for many of my colleagues was discussed years ago but then was rejected. So we've got Silver Line trains going all the way to the end of the line empty in many cases.
Mr. Bulger, I understand what weekend means. What does late night mean?
Well, we're going to have to consider that under the docket when we consider the time.
But we're putting opening it on the public docket, so I think the public
opening
needs
and closing.
To know what you mean by late night.
Whatever we agree on when we close the system.
I'm sorry?
Whatever the agreement is on closing the system. Is it 11:30? Is it going to be 12? Whatever we agree on. That would be the definition of late night.
What's the time period that you would want these turnbacks east of Stadium Armory to occur? After 7:30, after 8 o'clock, after 9 o'clock? what, how do
I'll, I'll have to get back to you on that. I don't have that specifically.
It's probably not.
We don't have that nailed down yet. Probably you have to add that to the document.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So these are just items that would be added to the public docket for the public to consider. And so keeping that in mind, let's have a vote on whether the district's proposal should be added. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Can I ask a question, Mr. Goldman?
I'm sorry. Yes, go.
So just a question about Metrobus service number one. The G9, this is the reimbursable route that just in committee today was offered to move forward. So we're looking to extend that before it actually is implemented.
I think they're just talking about public comment on it extending to Fort Lincoln.
I understand what this is, but
there's no defined terminal starting in the implementation. So
I understand that, but isn't it just service that's just starting as a reimbursable?
Well, it hasn't been defined yet as a terminus. We're going to try it in the docket to determine a terminus for the G9 at Fort Lincoln. And D.C., the District of Columbia, would pay for that.
Right. Okay.
It hasn't been defined, Christian, so we're trying to define it in the public hearing, that it would terminate at Fort Lincoln.
Okay.
Is that responsive to your question?
Mostly enough.
Okay. All right, so we can take a vote on the district proposals. All in favor of adding the district proposals to the public docket agenda, signify by saying aye.
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 Thank you.
Opposed? Nay. Thank you. All right. I believe Ms. Harley has a proposal for Maryland.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to move to amend the attachment A to this resolution to add the following proposed Maryland bus service eliminations, reductions, and restructurings as described in the attached table to section 1 of attachment A covering the following routes: the W19, the B30, the W13, J7 and 9, P17, 18, and 19. B27, Z11, J5, Z7, T2, C11 and 13, H11, 12 and 13, F1 and 2, C8, J1, and T14. The reason why we are bringing this amendment is we're trying to minimize the impact to our riders by providing options to restructure the routes, avoiding complete eliminations of routes where possible, avoiding reductions of service in the most crowded corridors. The change focus on routes where alternatives exist and seek to give our counties and the public the most flexible possible options in order to mitigate the impact of service changes while meeting the general manager's proposed budget target.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion on the proposals to be added to the public docket advanced by Ms. Harley? Okay, we'll take a vote. All in favor of adding those items, those proposed routes?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Very good. Is there anybody else proposal? Yes, Ms. Hutchins.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to add the following for the Virginia Metrobus service. The Leesburg.
I'm sorry, Ms. Hutchins, a little louder. Some of the parties.
Leesburg Pike 28X to eliminate the entire line. And it was shortened in FY16. And Richmond Highway Express, the Rex bus, reduced the midday frequency. And the Lincolnia Pentagon to eliminate Route 7X, which is the Route 7W, will remain. And it's so only looking at the X. D.C. Dulles, which is also on the other, the 5A, raised the fare to cover the entire subsidy, and it's almost elimination there. And Columbia Pike Federal Triangle, 16X is the discontinued route segment between the Pentagon and Federal Triangle. And Columbia Heights West Pentagon City, 16G, H, and K, combined routes into one alignment to reduce the peak frequencies in those other ones.
Thank you. Is there a second for Ms. Hudgens' motion?
I have to ask you about that.
Very good. Any discussion or any questions on Ms. Hudgens' amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of adding the additional bus routes for the public hearing as proposed by Ms. Hudgens, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. It's adopted. All right, so any other proposed
Mr. Goldman.
Conditions? Mr. Evans?
And Mr. Wiederfeld, maybe you can help me out with this. When we, I think you were with me, didn't we speak in Falls Church once a long time ago? Oh, you weren't there? Were you with me?
You mean the one where you promised you would do the bus? That one?
Yeah, the bus.
I was not there.
Oh, you weren't there? Okay. I did, and it just dawned on me. So I promised the people in Falls Church, we terminated their bus. I think it went from East Falls Church to West Falls Church, maybe. Is that possible?
Sure.
Okay. And I assume it's still terminated? So I would like to add to the docket the return of the East Falls Church to West Falls Church bus that was mentioned to me when I spoke there many months ago. How is it going to be paid for? I don't know. Let's just put it out there. We'll figure that out. At least we'll give them an opportunity to get their bus back, I guess.
That's the
former alignment of the 3B. What is it? Oh, the 3B. Oh, good. There, somebody knows what I'm talking about. Yeah. The district will pay for the West Falls Church bus. I don't know. Is that how three people?
Okay. We have this colloquy. Is there a second to the chairman's motion?
Okay.
Very good. All right. So there is.
I've kept my commitment to the Falls Church people in case I ever go back there again.
Question for Mr. Hummer, do you have enough information as to what the proposal is to be able to describe it on the agenda? Yes? Okay. Any further discussion?
You could be our hero in Falls Church.
Adding
you never
whatever
know.
Proposal this is of Mr. Evans to the docket, signify by saying aye. Any opposed? None? Okay. It's adopted. So we're back to the are there any other motions? Any other amendments? Seeing none, we're back to the main motion to move the public hearing agenda as proposed and as amended by the prior four amendments. So all in favor of moving that agenda to the public docket, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, the docket is so amended. I believe that concludes this meeting of the Finance Committee. Be careful out there today, guys. The White House Christmas tree lighting is this afternoon, this evening. Traffic may be miserable, so take Metrorail.